Veterans right now that are returning from Iraq and Afghanistan have a much higher unemployment rate than the rest of our population.
Senator John Tester on the Veterans Jobs Bill that passed the Senate yesterday, 95-0. And with that, we begin where we should begin today, honoring our nation's veterans on Veterans Day. No matter when you served in the military, thank you for your service, everybody, if you are a veteran listening right now. Later in the show, we'll talk to a World War II vet who went all the way after the war to the Democratic presidential nomination, George McGovern. But right now, we are at a moment when a new tide of American servicemen and women, some 30,000 returning from Iraq by the end of next month, will soon be coming home from war, many of them leaving the military after that to work, to look for work and to look for a meaningful life outside the force. Not always so easy. A Time magazine article out today describes how that will be difficult for many because the military and the rest of America have become worlds apart to an unprecedented degree in American history. Mark Thompson wrote that article and joins me now, along with Matt Gallagher, senior writing editor with the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Thanks for coming on today, both of you. Hello.
Good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
And Matt, thanks for your service in the Iraq War. Where did you serve?
I spent 15 months in Iraq from 2007 through 2009 with the 25th Infantry Division.
Now, Mark, your article begins with Marine Sergeant Alex Lemons returning from Iraq in 2008 and says he felt as alien here as he did over there. Why did he feel that way?
Well, I spoke to Sergeant Lemons quite a bit, and he talked about how upon his return, the first thing you miss is the constant rush of adrenaline. You know, you've been so hyper for so long, you come home and nobody's hyper around you. Now, that's normal, but what's particularly striking, he found, is that there was no indication that his nation was at war. He'd been over three times. Three times he came back to Utah. And each time he was more and more concerned, discombobulated, struck by the fact that there was nothing going on. And it was very, for him, and I think a lot of other troops, disorienting that that was the case.
You know, former Defense Secretary Robert Gates was very aware of this dynamic, as you cite in the article, and he talked about it in a speech at Duke University last year. Here's a short excerpt.
Whatever their fond sentiments for men and women in uniform, for most Americans, the wars remain an abstraction, a distant and unpleasant series of news items that do not affect them personally. Even after 9/11, in the absence of a draft, for a growing number of Americans, service in the military, no matter how laudable, has become something for other people to do.
Defense Secretary Gates last year, Matt Gallagher from the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Does that ring true to you? And does the story of Sergeant Lemon that Mark just told ring true to you?
Both ring very true to me, both from my experiences transitioning home and from discussions with other Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. The most disconcerting part, as Secretary Gates referenced, is very much military at war, country at peace. You know, coming back, first time in America's history that taxes were lowered during a time of war. I can only imagine the ridiculousness of having a war drive right now for war bonds or something like that. That it just wouldn't occur. And the impact on the individual soldier that has is as they transition out, it augments the sense of isolation that you know, after 15 months in combat with your battle buddies, striving with for one goal with your unit, to go from that to completely isolated out of the military and not feeling connected with anyone, that feeling's even more augmented by the fact that you know, civilians aren't really connected with these wars.
Right. And beyond that, Mark, you quote Sergeant Lemon saying people don't know and don't want to know what they've been through. But is it that they don't want to know, or that most Americans are just uncomfortable with people coming home from war and don't know what's appropriate to ask or say?
Well, I don't know. I think that folks should be happy when troops come home from war. The problem, I think, for many of these troops, and Matt can speak to this, is that it is a war is a foreign thing. Whether, you know, obviously you're in a foreign country, but it is something that civilians really have no. They can sympathize with it, but they really can't have empathy because they've never been through it themselves. And a lot of them, frankly, like the notion of putting that magnetic yellow ribbon on the rear fender of their SUV to say, hey, I support the troops. But in reality, they really don't want to talk to them about what they've been through. Plainly, they're happy, you know, subcontracting this national obligation out to what is increasingly a military caste, and they really don't pay it much attention.
Matt, have you had experiences like that?
I have, all too often, frankly, especially when I was trying to find work. I was very proud of my service. I got out as a captain. I had a college degree, I struggled kind of trying to explain to employers what my military resume meant and what it looked like. That is a very common problem for transitioning veterans. Part of it is feeds into that disconnect. Another part is just kind of a language barrier. A civilian employer isn't going to be interested in how many patrols, combat patrols, a person went on, but they probably might be interested to know how many millions of dollars worth of equipment many veterans managed and brought back. And that bridging those kind of divides through resume workshops is something that needs to occur more, both within the military as veterans transition out and back here in the States.
So let's open up the phones on that point. Any Iraq or Afghanistan war vets listening right now, the floor is rightly yours today. Call up and tell the other 99% of us anything you think we need to know about what you went through there or what you need now that you're back here. 212-433-WNYC. Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans, if any of you happen to be listening right now, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. As we observe Veterans Day with Matt Gallagher from the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and Mark Thompson, who wrote a new cover story in the Time magazine that's out today on how civilian society and the military are becoming increasingly worlds apart in this country. Iraq and Afghanistan vets, 212-433-WNYC. What does the rest of the country need to know about what you went through there or what you need now that you're back here? 212-433-9692. And Mark, this term, the other 1%, as you use it to refer to Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, not in the Occupy Wall Street sense of people making $1 million a year, but because the stat is dead on. Just about 1% of the adult population has served in these wars. Is that historically low for a major period of war for our country?
Sure. A couple of things. Number one, Brian, they're all volunteers. If we'd had some sort of national service or draft, you could step it up. And so these troops would not have to go back 14 times, as a fellow did who recently died on his 14th combat tour. At the same time, you know, let's face it, we knew we would head down this path in 1973 when we created the all-volunteer force and did away with the draft. And that worked fine for, I guess, 30 years. But as soon as we entered two sustained long wars, we never revisited the issue, and the civilian and political world seemed perfectly content to just turnstile these soldiers back and back and back and again. And that's a price we're going to be paying for decades to come. And finally, as we raise in the article, hey, let's have a conversation about this. Is this really the way we want to wage our wars forever in the future, just sort of subcontracting it out to a narrow slice of the population? Is that the best way to do it, or does it make the bond between the military and society frayed and brittle?
Matt, what do you think about that? And we're going to have George McGovern, as I mentioned earlier, on the show later this hour. Of course, the Democratic presidential candidate who was anti-Vietnam War and very anti-draft when he ran in 1972. And in his new book, he calls for the reinstatement of a military of a wartime draft. He says in peacetime we don't need it, but in wartime we actually should have a draft for equity's sake and to tie the nation together. I'm not sure the generals and the admirals and everybody want that, because the quality of the military as a volunteer is so, so good right now. But what do you think as a veteran?
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, on one hand, it is having an all-volunteer force is at its essence pretty undemocratic. You know, as Mark writes about, these wars are being fought by a very, very small percentage of the American population. On the other hand, the military itself, and certainly my experience will attest to this, is very happy having working with just volunteers. It allows for kind of this professional environment that might not occur.
And that's a better word anyway. People say the all-volunteer army. They're actually fairly well paid, as Mark's article reminds us.
Yes.
Average of like $85,000 a year. But it's a professional military.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the real result of this is, you know, the Iraq War's got a withdrawal date, and, you know, the Afghanistan War looks like it's beginning to wind down possibly. But you know, the effect of these wars are going to be last for decades in terms of veterans care. And the concern, I think, with the all-volunteer force is it's so easy for as we saw with these wars, for the politicians to kind of push them through, and American society just shrugs because it's not their skin, it's not their sons and daughters, not realizing that they're going to be paying for these wars for decades through veterans care.
Let's take a phone call. Here is Mac in San Antonio. Mac, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in. Hello from New York.
Good morning. Well, I just wanted to say that I was in Afghanistan, and I served there. And I got back, and, you know, I'm applying to jobs. And I had a skill that was directly transferable. I don't have the resume issues that certain combat veterans had. I was a hospital administrator.
Mm-hmm.
I did that job for military hospitals, and I get back, and, you know, people just, you know, private hospitals, whether they be in New York or Texas, they just don't want to be bothered. They don't know any veterans. They don't understand it, and it's rather sad. And even to the president's point of trying to do tax credits and this sort of thing for veterans, you have institutions like the VA where veterans are supposed to get a preference, and they still don't get, you know, they don't follow the rules in terms of hiring. And so veterans are still, even in the Veterans Administrator, view it as an anomaly.
Or one down. Mac, do you have any advice to offer Mac, especially with the good experience that he has?
Yeah, that's a tough anecdote to hear, because he does have those direct transferable skills. And I just want to remind any employers listening, like, hiring veterans isn't charity. It's actually smart business. Leadership lessons and managing digital technology, getting on-the-job experience, as Mac just referenced, really does put them leaps and bounds ahead of their peers in many ways. But as Mac experienced, it's because there's just that lack of connection and a lack of understanding. There's this fear, this almost lingering stereotypical fear from Vietnam about what a veteran in the workplace does, and it's just not the case for our generation.
From Vietnam, even though we hear about, you know, the problems with traumatic brain injury, with post-traumatic stress disorder, the same kinds of things we were hearing after Vietnam.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's almost like this dark underbelly of awareness of those things is kind of this distance from wanting to work directly with veterans who might have suffered a TBI or
Mac, do you
PTS.
Think that's it? In your experience, I know you can't read into the minds of the employers who aren't hiring you, but I heard somebody on the takeaway today say, people look at vets trying to get jobs the way they look at ex-prisoners coming out of jail and trying to get jobs. There's this kind of suspicion of what's this guy's temperament going to be in the workplace. Mac, does that sound like what you're facing?
I don't know, but I would say it has something to do with it. I'm sort of an anomaly in that, I finished all my schooling before I went into the military. I graduated from Columbia University in a graduate program. And, people just don't, I don't really get it. I can't speculate to say why is it, but the people don't know. It's just a strange thing, a veteran, okay?
Mac, good luck to you. Thank you for calling in. I hope things turn up.
Thanks.
Happy Veterans Day. Thank you for your service. Peter in Astoria, current member of the Reserves. You're on WNYC. Hello, Peter.
Hi. No, I was a member of the Reserves. I wanted to say this. Initially, you screen a... First of all, thank you for taking my call. Gentlemen, thank you for your service to my country and for my children on their behalf. What I wanted to say was this. I admonish you guys that your service to your country is entering another plateau. Your service to your country, we need, and I agree with you guys, the awareness of the sacrifice of our veterans has just really been voided by selfishness and our attitude towards ourselves and our society. I'm asking you guys to bring forth to the American public and your organizations that you're a part of to please serve your country in the political forum, because we need people who, like yourselves, have more of an understanding of what human life, the value of human life now, that you may not have had before going into service for your country.
Peter, that's a really interesting thought. And Matt, I guess that's part of the point of your group, the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. It's to fight for the interests of the vets in the political sphere.
Yeah, absolutely. We're a nonpartisan organization with no political affiliation, but we do have advocates down in D.C. that have been instrumental in putting together the post 9/11 GI Bill and this the Vow to Hire Heroes Act. We've been helping both the House of Veterans Affairs Committee and the Senate.
Is that what
Affairs Committee. And
passed
that
yesterday?
That's why we exist.
Is
yeah.
that what they call what passed yesterday?
Yes. The Vow to Hire Heroes Act, which will provide business incentives to hire new veterans.
What is it, like a $5,000 tax credit for every vet from these wars? Who's hired?
Yeah, I don't have the exact numbers on me, you get one for hiring a veteran, and then you get a larger one if you hire a veteran that qualifies as with some kind of medical disability from the VA. It's just really a great idea, and then on the other side, it's helping streamline the transitional assistance program within the military, so veterans are better prepared before they set foot in the civilian world.
Of course, Mark Thompson from Time, I'm not sure that the political engagement would work to the benefit of what I think Peter, the caller's politics are, because as you point out in the article, people in the military tend to be more conservative than the population at large.
Yeah, I think that's true, but also that shouldn't surprise us. Once you go to a volunteer military, we're talking about a self-selecting force, and basically, conservatives like guns and fighting more than liberals do, everything else being equal.
Do you think let me fact-check something that I mentioned from your article, and somebody called up and questioned it. Did I cite the stat right about the average pay? Where did that $85,000 figure come from?
The numbers are a real morass, and you got to be careful, and we were. Our numbers come from the Congressional Research Service, Stephen Daggett, one of the premier military budget analysts in this country, and it includes benefits. So we're talking 1998, roughly, an average soldier was getting, including benefits, $56,000 a year. Now that's gone up to about $85,000 a year. Both of those numbers are in today's dollars, so they don't include the effect of inflation. And in addition to keeping pace with inflation, basic pay has gone up 20% since that point in time. Housing allowances have gone up 188%, and medical and retirement bennies have gone up by substantial amounts as well. So, there are all, you know, people will pluck different figures to make different points, but we tried really hard to go with the straight aheadest numbers we could find, and that was from the Congressional Research Service.
And one of the reasons for the relatively good pay, you suggest, is that only 22% of Congress is veterans, compared to 77% just after Vietnam. And maybe non-combatants in Congress feel sentimental or even guilty toward those who serve.
Well, it's interesting. I just noted in passing in the hallway here that that story is the lead story in today's USA Today. And just returning for a second to pay, it's awful difficult to measure it with a yardstick everyone can agree on. But the 10th Quadrennial Review on Military Compensation, for a mouthful, a year or so ago, threw everything together in the pot and did a huge study. And the bottom line on that study, which hasn't been challenged, is that the average soldier earns more than 80% of civilians of the same age and education. So that's where they're at, right at the cusp, but just at the end of the top fifth.
The top 20%, you better watch out, Matt, or Occupy Wall Street's going to start protesting you.
I would like to add, though, that this is, to listeners not familiar with military culture, this is not a standard 8-hour job, 5 days a week kind of thing. A year-long tour in a combat zone, even when you're back here in the States training, you're putting in 14 to 16-hour days. Certainly, I would make the case that those wages are well-earned. And further, to get into the military for a bunch of other reasons, such as obesity or education and potential run-ins with the law, a lot of America's youth don't qualify. So it's just not like, again, harkening back to kind of an old stereotype, any dirtbag off the street can walk in and join the ranks.
Evidence of how qualified for something you have to be to join the military these days. Just real briefly, we're almost out of time, and I have to get our next guest on before his wife has a baby, we'll explain. But Matt, do you think coming home from Iraq or Afghanistan changes the politics of a lot of the guys who come home? If the military tends to be very conservative-leaning as a population, does that change? Does that become more so? Do you have enough experience or surveys after enough years to have any idea about that?
In my experience, soldiers and service members tend to be apolitical. And you kind of have to learn – you had to learn that kind of detachment through these wars, because everyone else was being very political about them. And yet you were part of the very small percentage that was going to go out there and try to make the best of a bad situation. And certainly my background, which was very academic and white collar, prepared me for that. But I found it liberating and invigorating to kind of embrace that.
That was when you were in.
Yes. And now that we're transitioning out, you're starting to see young veterans becoming political leaders, but it seems to be more centrist than anything. I haven't seen a giant wave or trend quite yet.
Time will tell. Matt Gallagher from the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, happy Veterans Day. Thank you again for your service.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And Mark Thompson, who has a cover story in the new Time magazine about how military culture and the rest of American culture are increasingly societies apart. Mark, thank you.
You're welcome, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Adam Davidson from NPR's Planet Money on corporate taxes and the deficit. Stay tuned.